Chapter 63. It's been well over an hour, Gunn remarked, looking glumly at his watch. He and Giordino stood on the rise, watching the scene of devastation below. The laboratory fire burned in a blazing tempest, consuming the entire building and adjacent garage. Black smoke and flames leaped high into the sky, casting a yellow glow over the entire compound. Across the landscaped grounds, a large chunk of the residence was missing, replaced by rushing water where the northern wing of the house previously stood. "Let's take a quick drive down," Giordino said. "Maybe he's injured and can't walk out." Gunn nodded. It had been almost an hour since they heard the automatic fire from inside. Pitt should have made it out long ago. They started to walk toward the car when a low rumble shook from below. No earthquake this time, they knew, but rather the erosive effects of the flooding waters. They stopped and stared, dreading what they knew was next. From their vantage, it resembled a collapsing house of cards. The northern end of the structure began toppling one wall at a time. The structural failure seemed to build momentum, moving across the residence in a rippling wave of destruction. The central section of the residence simply folded in on itself with a grinding crash, then disappeared under the water. The large white spire over the entrance melted away, disintegrating into a thousand bits under the floodwaters. Gunn and Giordino could only see chunks of debris poking through the water as the bulk of the residence slid off its ledge and washed down the mountain. In just a few seconds, it was gone. Only a small section of the southern wing survived, standing next to a wide flow of water where the rest of the house had once stood. With the destruction of the house, all hopes for finding Pitt alive had vanished. Gunn and Giordino knew that no one in and around the residence could have survived. Neither man said a word nor made a move. Together they stood and solemnly stared at the altered river as it glided over the foundation of the house and roared down the cliffside beyond. The rushing of the wild waters competed with the crackling from the lab fire to disrupt the otherwise quiet late-night hour. Then Gunn's ears detected another sound. "What's that?" he asked. He pointed a finger toward a small chunk of the southern wing, which stood on dry ground and had survived the collapse of the main residence. The whirring pitch of a high-revving engine rumbled from the hillside behind. The motor sporadically coughed and stuttered, but otherwise sounded like it was operating at its red line. The roar grew louder until it was matched with a pair of lights that slowly crept over the hill. Through the smoke and flames of the burning laboratory, the object appeared like a giant primordial bug crawling out of a hole in the ground. Two round but dimly illuminated lamps probed the night like a pair of large yellow eyes. A shiny metallic body followed behind, clouded by dirt and dust kicked up by its clawing rear appendages. The living beast even breathed vapor, a white cloud of smoke rising from its head. The creature, lurching with great effort, finally clambered over the hill, seeming to fight every step of the way. A sharp gust of wind suddenly blew the smoke and dust away, and under the light of the burning fire, Gunn and Giordino could see that it was no overgrown insect, but the antique Rolls-Royce from the corral. "Only one guy I know would be driving an old crate like that at a time like this," Giordino shouted with a whoop. Jumping into the Range Rover, Gunn charged the car down the hill and stormed back into the compound. Shining their headlights onto the rolls, they saw that the old car was still struggling to lurch forward and had a line of chains stretched taut off the rear bumper. The old beast was trying desperately to pull something up the side of the hill. Inside the rolls, Pitt threw a thankful wave toward the approaching Range Rover, then turned back to coaxing the old auto forward. His numb right foot held the accelerator to the floor while the gear shift lever was still locked in first gear. The rear wheels spun and clawed at the ground, the worn, airless tires gamely trying to find a grip. But the weight behind was too great, and the big car seemed to be losing the battle. Under the hood, the overworked engine began to protest with loud knocks. What little coolant that existed in the block and radiator had nearly all boiled away, and Pitt knew it wouldn't be long before the engine seized. With a surprised look, he suddenly saw Giordino appear and grab hold of the doorpost with a wink and a smile. Bandaged leg and all, he threw his weight into pushing the car forward. Gunn, Wofford, and even Teresa appeared, taking up spots around the vehicle and pushing with all their might. The extra manpower was just enough to propel the car in its last gasp. With a sudden lunge, the big car lurched forward. 30 feet behind, a large block of granite teetered over the edge of the hill, then skidded forward easily under the car's newfound momentum. Chugging forward to a safe, dry spot, Pitt killed the engine under a whoosh of white steam. As the vapor cleared away, Pitt saw that he was surrounded by a dozen scientists and technicians, along with a guard or two who had given up fighting the lab fire to investigate his appearance. He cautiously climbed out of the rolls and walked to the rear of the car. Giordino and the others had already gathered around and confirmed that the chained item had survived Pitt's toe intact. Fearing for their safety, Pitt gripped his .45 as the crowd surged close to them. But he need not have worried. At seeing that the sarcophagus of Genghis Khan had been rescued from the flood, the guards and scientists broke into a cheer and applauded him.